Dr. Paul Greenacre from Ottawa, Canada. I'm a kind of a green dentist or a holistic dentist in terms of sense of trying to see how oral health relates to total health. That's the theme of my practice. And I'm a hockey nut. I play 4 to 5 games of hockey every week, and I'm 700 years old. So you have to realize how keen I am about playing hockey. I was very upset this year to see that a lot of the Canadian Hockey Associations told the kids that it's optional to wear a mouth guard. And that really upsets me because I know there's no really strong medical research ever done showing that hockey mouth guards will prevent or minimize concussions, but it's common sense to all the intelligent physicians and dentists who've looked at and studied jaw behavior and jaws in trauma. I've seen a lot of motor vehicle accident victims, and every time there's a motor vehicle accident, there's whiplash. Whenever there's whiplash, there's jaw lash. So your jaw opens and snaps shut, and that is a very serious component of the damage that happens to you in a trauma. And a lot of hockey players I see, I think, have very deep posterior bites. I look at Sidney Crosby, I look at Clark MacArthur. These are hockey players who would do very, very well to have a better designed hockey mouth guard that keeps their jaw downward and forward when they play hockey. So when they get hockey hits, as I've had many hockey hits and minor concussions, you don't suffer as much. And I want to say that for all the minor hockey players in Canada, I want you all to be wearing a lower mouth guard. And a lower mouth guard because you're wearing a full cage. You don't need it to protect your teeth. And you're not going to be throwing your helmet off and doing a Mark Borowiecki or Chris Neal hockey fight. Keep that cage on and wear a lower mouth guard. It's much more comfortable. It provides a cushion. And a lower mouth guard also helps you breathe better because it opens your bite and gets your jaw into a better position for breathing. All those hockey players you see on the bench with the mouth guard between their teeth, they're holding the mouth guard because the upper mouth guard pushes your lower jaw back. That pushes your tongue back, and that makes you breathe poorly. So actually, the old mouth guards and the upper jaws made you have less oxygen and caused an oxygen debt to build up much more rapidly. So I want all the hockey moms and hockey dads and hockey coaches to be smart and get all their players to wear a lower hockey mouth guard. And take it from me and all the physicians I've studied with, this is a very, very important thing to do, because I'm not talking about teeth and preserving teeth. I'm talking about preserving better airways and preventing more concussion damage. Okay, this is Dr. Paul Greenacre, old-timer hockey player, signing off and saying, wear those lower mouth guards, guys. I was trying to learn as much as possible when I was younger, and when I was a dental editor, there was times when I kind of thought I knew it all, and then I would get very surprised. I went to school at McGill, started out in pre-meds in 1964, and I was fascinated at the McGill Osler Library. They had a quote by Dr. Osler in one of his books that said, "The mouth is the mirror of all disease." And I couldn't comprehend that for the life of me. What is this guy talking about? How can the mouth be the mirror of all disease? Well, after studying practicing dentistry for 47 years, I now firmly believe that Osler was absolutely correct, and the mouth is the mirror of all disease. And what I've tried to do is explain to MDs how important medical dentistry is. I've been practicing for 47 years. Spent 9 of those years also being a dental editor and interviewing about 250 of the world's best dentists. And some of it rubbed off, and this is what I've learned. oral health is critical to your total health. And I want you to think about that, because we quickly brush our teeth and head out in the morning and say, oh gosh, I forgot to floss. But I want you to remember to floss tomorrow or catch up on it tonight. Anyways, one thing my patients often ask me about is they say, why do we clench and grind our teeth at night? Like, why do we do that? And I want to go over the basic reasons why we clench and grind. And I think the number one reason is we clench and grind because we have a bad airway. And it's a symptom, I think, of snoring and sleep apnea, to clench and grind your teeth. And if we don't have a good developed upper jaw, the human face is actually shrinking. Our upper jaws are getting smaller and smaller and smaller because we have less and less good trace minerals. The soil that we grow our nutrients on is not being replenished because we don't let soil lie fallow and have alpha pick up trace minerals and pull it up to the surface and replenish the soil as they used to do in the old days when we had better soil conservation methods. And so we know from talking to medical and nutritional experts that we don't have the same nutrient quantities in our food. So therefore, the upper jaw is shrinking because your face grows from 0 to 14 years of age. And we want to emphasize for parents that it's important to be looking for more trace minerals in your diet. We used to go from breastfeeding to bone marrow for the children to bone-based broth soups. We don't do all those steps anymore. We're missing our trace minerals badly. I want to emphasize that, but the number one reason for people clenching and grinding is a badly developed upper jaw and a badly placed lower jaw, which leads to an airway problem. And when you snore at night and you have sleep apnea at night, you run the risk of dying at night, because people who die in their sleep, and we often think of that as a wonderful thing, people who die in their sleep actually choke to death from lack of oxygen. It's either a brain and a stroke or a heart attack and heart oxygen deficiency caused by poor breathing at night. So I want you to know the number one reason for people to clench and grind is we move the jaw around to try to get a better airway. The number two reason is a physical issue like a TMJ problem or a problem that might be an emotional problem or a chronic stress problem, or it could be a metabolic, biochemistry, nutritional deficiency and a hormonal imbalance problem, or it could be an orthodontic problem. And we know that 70% of the kids in North America today have a badly developed upper jaw and a badly placed lower jaw. So we're de-evolving with our civilized diet. It just could be a very bad bite and a very deep bite. If you've lost molars and you've lost structural height and you haven't had them replaced, or no partial or no bridges to replace that, you can become a snorer and a clencher and grinder almost simply by doing that. It can also be caused by a traumatic event that hurt the jaw joint or the jaw muscles. And it could also be a factor of a bad dream, the PTSD, the post-traumatic stress disorder, of having a bad experience. And then as you grind your teeth at night or you dream, you reenact that bad event. You have night terrors or sleep terrors, and you clench and grind your teeth due to that. And maybe a tongue disorder or a postural swallow disorder. All these are orthodontic issues or a bad bite issue. So clenching and grinding, not good stuff. And you want to try to get a jaw pillow or a soft cushion or orthodontics to fix that. So Dr. Paul Greenacre signing off for why we clench and why we grind and what we can do about it.
Before you go on, Dr. Greenacre, to more audio bites here, I have a couple of questions for you.
Sure.
Being Lynn Thompson, your interviewer, who does your dentistry for you?
A number of friends have helped me out with my dentistry. I've seen different dentists over the years, and I think it's always a good idea to see different dentists because everybody has a different perspective and everybody has a different diagnostic strength.
So you've been dentist hopping?
I've been dentist hopping because physician hopping and dentist hopping is the good idea because you get different perspectives. And I also see a naturopath. I also see an osteopath. And I also see people who do energy healing and Reiki. And I believe that we're more than just bones and muscle. There's a lot more to us. Our left side of our brain may tell us that we're separate and so on, but the right side of the brain tells us that we're all interconnected energetically. So I think it's important to do as much energetic diagnostics as well as physical body diagnostics, and to use a variety of practitioners to support your health. And I'm very fortunate. I'm 70 years old. My belief is that you can have a lot of great health until you're 80 or 90, or maybe even 100 years of age, if you watch what you eat, how you think, and you tend to be happy every day. So that's my secret to success. Nutrition and being alkaline, being green. You know, try to have 80-20, 80% raw food, 20%, just do whatever the heck you want. So that's basically my system, and I just try to be happy and enjoy, have a lot of gratitude for what I have. The theme of my practice and my teaching is that smart dentistry for smart families is achievable if we understand how important your jaws are. And I thought I'd tell you about the top functions of your jaws. The first function of the jaws is I believe dentistry owns the airway. The development of the upper jaw, the palate, is the key to your nose breathing. You want a wide upper palate so you can breathe well through your nose. I've heard breathing's important. And the backup system, of course, is breathing through your mouth. And when we do exercise, we breathe through our nose and our mouth. And if your jaw is well developed downward and forward, unlike the cartoon characters, The Simpsons, if your jaw is backward, you get a poor airway. All the Simpson characters have bad airways. And if your jaw is downward and forward, like the old characters they used to have in cartoon times, Dick Tracy or a strong jaw downward and forward, a Jay Leno concept. I think that is really, you have to understand that breathing is important. And if you have a broad upper jaw, that makes your breathing through your nose better. It also makes your sinus drainage better. And it also makes your lower jaw grow well downward and forward. So you have a good bite, and good breathing happens with a good bite. The other thing that happens with a good bite, maybe the third major function, is head and neck posture is improved. So if you have a good, well-developed upper palate and a lower jaw well-developed, your jaw stands to help your neck or your neck vertebrae line up better. So the number one symptom I find of a bad jaw joint or a bad TMJ problem is a sore neck. And that's the most common finding in research documents. Dr. Cliff Simmons did this beautiful research project, and he said, gee, the most interesting, the most common symptom of a TMJ problem is a sore neck. So who would think of that? The final thing I want to talk about in terms of early growth and development is how important breastfeeding is. The breastfeeding action of suckling. You must realize that human beings can breathe through their nose and swallow at the same time for only the first 6 months of their life. And that's for breastfeeding, so the baby can latch onto the breast and breastfeed and at the same time breathe through its nose. And so it's critical in the first 6 months that we're doing exclusive breastfeeding and don't supplement any other foods at that time. The next thing is the suckling for breastfeeding leads to the development of swallowing, and it leads to our conversation about the tongue. And the function of the tongue is amazing. Norman Doidge wrote a book called The Brain's Way of Healing, and in it he talks about how the tongue is being described as the royal road to new brain cells. New brain cells is called neurogenesis. And if you stimulate the tongue in a stroke patient or a concussion patient, you help stimulate new brain cell growth. So I know that I've discussed this with Norman Shealy and different physicians I know, and the key is stimulate the tongue, you get neurogenesis. And Dr. Fred Kahn has been developing lasers, and he's interested in this type of concept as well. I think that you should be looking at the tongue as being the most important muscle in the human body. And dentistry, of course, owns the tongue. And I want you to know that there is actually one nerve in every muscle in the body, except the tongue. And the tongue has five. It's got the five developmental arches of the body, key cranial nerves. That's the trigeminal nerve, which is the first and the lead nerve of the human being. And it's the most important cranial nerve. It's got the facial nerve, the glossopharyngeal nerve. It's got the vagus nerve and the hypoglossal nerve. So the tongue is so well endowed neurologically and so capable of helping us. We've got to appreciate that it's no small wonder that the wonder of the tongue is what led to the miracle of human speech. And human speech is what led to the development of the brain. So our brain grew as we spoke, and we had speculation, and we looked at the stars at night and the space around us, and that developed our spirituality. So I think the tongue is the key difference between humans and all other animals, and our ability to speak relates, of course, to that capacity of the tongue to do the amazing things that a tongue can do. Also, when you have well-developed jaws, it makes the ears function better. And I want to explain that there's something in embryological medicine called the Meckel's cartilage. And Meckel's cartilage is a little mini jawbone and ear bone that is in the embryo. And that turns into the ear and the lower jaw. And it shows the connection between hearing, balance, and jaw function. When you've got bad jaw function, TMJ problem, you're clenching and grinding at night, you have balance problems and ear problems more commonly than other people. So it's very important that you understand that. I'd mentioned previously that when you develop the upper jaw to the maximum, your sinuses will drain better. But I think most sinus diagnosis and sinus drainage, the ENT specialists haven't been trained to look and measure the shape and the size of the upper palate. So again, dentistry has to be working together with all these different branches of medicine. And some of the most intelligent quotes I've seen on the medical side of dentistry have come from Dr. Ullemeyer, who was an ENT specialist, Dr. Arlen, an ENT specialist, and Dr. James Costin, another ENT specialist. These three ENT specialists were emphatic in saying how important it is to have a well-developed and properly developed upper jaw and lower jaw. Oh, by the way, another important function of dentistry is to provide enzymes in digestion. And did I forget? Oh yeah, chewing. Another function, and function number 11, is chewing. And we know that if people have dentures, they can still chew without teeth. So I left chewing off as the last and the least important function. But I want you to think about jaws and airways, posture and balance, hearing, and the swallowing, speech, and the real key important things like balance, hearing, sinus drainage. That's the key things. ENT is ears, nose, and throat specialists. These are the physicians who are specializing in the functions of your ears, your nose, and your throat. We actually made a mistake. We should have called them ENJ specialists. It should be ears, nose, and jaws, because that's really the embryological area that they're working in. So ENTs should be thinking of themselves as ENJs and be more like Dr. James Costin, Dr. Henry Ullemeyer, and Dr. Harold Arlen, who spoke about the automandibular syndrome or the ear-jaw connection. And that's why in the future, I think every ears, nose, and throat specialist should have a dentist in his hip pocket that he can communicate with and challenge with clinical cases. We often talk about TMJ, and everybody has a TMJ. It's a temporomandibular joint. The real proper expression, I think, should be TMD, which is temporomandibular dysfunction. And the nutritionists that I know tease me, and they say, well, actually, TMD doesn't stand for that. It stands for trace mineral deficiencies, which lead to TMJ problems and TMD problems. So there you go. You can take whichever version you want of TMJ, TMD, or whatever. It could be temporomandibular dysfunction or trace mineral deficiency. And one last thing we can find out from your teeth is what is your mineral, trace mineral history. We can do a biopsy on a baby tooth and find out what your trace mineral history was in utero, what your mother was eating, and if she was deficient in certain trace minerals. And from that, that will lead us eventually in the future to figure out what diseases will you suffer from. We can then look at the adult teeth and the teeth that develop at 6 years of age, the six-year molar, and analyze them and find out what you ate for the first 6 years of your life and what trace minerals you're deficient in. So trace mineral analysis and essential fatty acids are the missing elements in nutrition, coaching, and science today. And I want you then to know that smart families have smart diets and have smart dentistry. And that's Dr. Paul Greenacre signing off on the functions of the jaws.
Have you ever done any dental work or dental observation on horses?
I'll tell you a story about a root canal on a dog. A canine was broken and got abscessed. Any animal in the canine world has its canine broken or bent or lost. That affects the performance of that animal. And I think that veterinarians and people who do, when they talk with animals, what's that expression?
Animal communication?
Animal communication, but there's people who are animal
whisperers.
They will tell you that if a canine is lost in the cat family or the dog family, that's a major impact on that dog's life. So I had the pleasure once working with a vet. He did the general anesthetic, and my assistant and I did the root canal.
Wow.
And my assistant was from Vietnam, just recently in Canada at that time. And she said, you know, in my country, we don't even do root canals on humans. Here you are doing a root canal on a dog's tooth. She said, I'm in culture shock. We love our dogs and our cats in North America. They're very near and dear to us.
Okay. Well, I just wondered, because I was at a horse workshop yesterday, and they were talking about how horses hold a lot of trauma in their jaws. And of course, we
That's right.
talking about
That's
humans
right.
grinding
right.
and clenching and, yeah.
I have a patient who works with horses, and he's not a horse whisperer, but he certainly tells me that just the bit in the mouth is a traumatic event for the horse, and to use it gently. And that's a very important thing, is that we realize that when you're manipulating the jaw of your horse, it's very important to use very subtle motions. And he says that it doesn't take very much to pass on the message, so be soft with your use of the bit.
Sounds good.
Okay, this is Dr. Paul Greenacre, old-timer hockey player, signing off.